Coming to you live from a room in a house, Bobby and Danny's Bowel Movements with Bobby and Danny. Hosted by Bobby and Danny. And now, here's Bobby and Danny.
Welcome to Vowel Movements, brought to you once again by TedAngel.com. I am Bobby Jordan.
And I'm Danny Secretion.
And we're so glad to be back with you again.
You started us off with an interesting taste there. What was that, Bobby?
That was
Jordan?
A little WWF old school there, introduction.
All right. I was going to say it's a little old school. Didn't have the, yes, folks, we promise you a wonderful evening.
That's right. Yeah,
so I like that. I can see the WWF.
That's right.
All right. So any reason for that?
Well, I think today,
other than we're recording this on a Monday.
We are recording this on a Monday.
After we're done, we're going to watch Raw.
Monday Night Raw. Bill Simmons from ESPN wrote an article, a few days ago, just about wrestling entrance themes. Mm-hmm.
Didn't you find that interesting that a writer for ESPN was writing
and a reputable writer too. I mean, writes about I read him a lot occasionally because he writes about baseball. Mm-hmm. And it was really great. Like, he knew what he was talking about, although he did say, that he didn't like the Triple H theme, and really that's Motorhead.
Which Triple H theme? Okay.
Yeah. Which is ridiculous. Cause that's Motorhead.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, dude.
and not just because it's Motorhead, but when we talk about wrestling entrance themes, it fits a few of the categories that you know I was thinking about when you came to me and said, "Hey, I want to talk about these wrestling themes." And I'm like, "Okay, I kind of, because I know what I think of when I'm always thinking of a good wrestling theme in it." And there's certain facets to that song.
There are, and so we'll get into that. The Bill Simmons article kind of sparked it a little bit.
Yeah.
But I know that you and I will have our own take on it.
Exactly.
So it was just the fact that he talked about it kind of spurred my, I want to add my two cents. I want Vowel Movements to kind of talk about that. So that's why I started the show off today.
All right,
with
good. Get everyone in the mood for that.
That's right. But first things first, last week we talked about Paloma's surgery.
Yes.
And I was evasive, to say the least, about what it was. I mean, I kind of said she had a cord of blood in her tummy, but it was an ovarian cyst. I hadn't ran it by her that we were going to talk about it. So since it was a female reproductive issue, I wasn't sure. But anyway, she said, you can. So I got some messages. A couple people said, hey, you never said what the deal was. Jazz from the Brown Cock podcast actually said, dude, what happened? You never said on there.
Yeah.
Like, what was it? So that's what it was. It was an ovarian cyst that had bled for 5 days. So.
But she's doing much better now.
She's perfect now, except she has a little scar that she's not fond of. But
you can get a nice tattoo around it. You know, just something creative with it. And speaking of Jazz Brown, had a little Facebook interaction with him saying that we need to have a huge roundtable discussion with Brown Cock. Vowel Movements, and he, I'm not sure if it was Jazz or Craig, who said we just call it Brown Movements.
The Brown Movements is on the horizon. Every time I see those guys, we talk about.
Oh, I would love that.
What
that
are
would
we
be so
do
much
so,
fun.
Our setup is a little limited, so we'll do some finagling. And I think, we just go out to a bar and four of us just sit down.
Are they going to clean it up for our show, or do we have to dirty it up for their show?
Well, I think that's exactly it. When they're on our show, they have to be on their best verbal behavior.
Okay.
And when we're on their show, it's just, we have to make sure we up our game with the dirty verbal behavior.
I don't think we're going to have a problem with that.
Probably not.
I think the
challenge... what are you talking about? We're so clean,
we
man.
We are. This is delicious milky that we're drinking today, too. Now, I don't think we're going to have it. I think it is going to pose a challenge for them to kind of... to play on the Vowel Movements turf.
I think so. Yeah. You and I know we can let the swear words fly.
Oh, yeah,
so that's no problem.
But you know, Jazz and Craig are so unbelievably witty and intelligent.
Sure. But they've been on the radio before. They know, and that's our angle here.
It'll be fun just to sit down with those guys.
You know, speaking of being on the radio, I saw a friend of mine who works for a local radio conglomerate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was just talking to him about, oh, hey, yeah, I'm doing a podcast. And he was just very excited about podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, his bread and butter is radio. So he can't go on record saying how much he loves podcasts. But it's just interesting that someone that is deeply embedded within, you know, the radio community has embraced podcasts so well. You know, I mean, it's pretty much all he listens to. It's new. It's exciting. There's personalities, you know, quote unquote personalities, where radio, they just, you know, he even said they want monkeys to spin records. That's all they want now. And
now they don't even want the monkeys.
Well, no kidding. They just computer the records to, excuse me. So, you know, at any rate, we're on to something good here.
Good.
You know, Brown Cock is on to something good. Yeah. Cat Chat, Five Songs with Paloma, those are on to something good. So,
which I had a blast doing that with Paloma. I don't know when our episode's
going
to air.
Hopefully that's going to air this Thursday.
This Thursday?
I hope to get it edited within the next couple of days. And then, yeah.
I had a blast on that one. Is if people are listening to this prior to that, the topic was bands I've slept with. And I'll just leave it at that. If you want to find out who I've slept with, keep an eye out.
All right.
Yeah, listen to Five Songs with Paloma.
So yeah, so everything that our little kind of community of friends have kind of stumbled into, we're kind of on the cusp of something good. And, you know, hopefully by the time podcasts really catch fire, you and I will be hitting full stride and we'll you know,
I already feel like I'm in my, we're hitting full stride.
Well, you are, because
right
you have a voice for radio. I have this. Actually, when I was talking to my friend that works for the local radio conglomerate, you know, I said, yeah, you know, Dan has the voice for radio. My voice is weird. And
No one likes their own voice.
Well,
their own voice.
But though. I think
my voice is completely nasally. And and you've also coined the phrase, that is correct.
That's correct, or that's right. I have a lot of they use. What's your yours is and whatnot.
I overuse the word amazing.
Amazing.
One time I listened to one of our episodes, I said the word amazing 27 times.
See, and that's something only the person saying it would realize. I mean, granted, there are some things like that's correct, you know, because, but I've never noticed that you said amazing.
I'm always paranoid that I'm thinking that Jazz and Craig from Brown Cock are listening to our show and they're playing a drinking game with how many times you say that is correct or how many times I say amazing.
Well,
and they take a shot or light up a cigarette and then they're just completely hammered or on a nicotine high that you would not believe by the end of the show. So,
all right. So we had a. We had reached out to our community via Facebook and Twitter. We are on Twitter. It is Radio Movements at Twitter.
Okay.
But we said, we are going to hit you with another show soon. What are you dying to hear us talk about?
Yeah.
And we had a couple suggestions there. And the first was Jason L. Brow. And he says, wrestling, punk rock, and bad tattoos. And the thing is, now, we don't talk about bad tattoos a lot. Dan and I both have tattoos, but Dan has relatively good tattoos, I would say. Right?
There's several schools of thought when it comes to tattoos, and I realize that every tattoo I have has my last name in it somewhere.
I think
I have two tattoos. One is a third of a sleeve, and the other is right across my back. But they were at very monumental times of my life. I got the one across my back when my mom was really sick.
Okay,
several years ago, and doctors didn't know what was going on. And then, as every mama's boy does, we deal with the burden of the mortality of our parents.
Okay.
And so this was like the first major blow. I'm like, oh my gosh, this could be it. And I started freaking out. My friend Shane, who is a tattoo artist, I went to him. I let him know what was going on and what I wanted to do, and I wanted to get my last name across my back in old English letters. I figure
that's low
I'm Mexican.
Rider. That's low rider letter. Not old English, Dan. That's low rider.
In my low rider letters, in green, white, and red, and LS. And he said, all right, I understand. And it was really cool because he talked to me about what was going on in my life. And then we sat there, we watched wrestling videos, we talked wrestling. And he was great for my first tattoo experience. And then my second tattoo, which also has my last name on it. you could say I designed it. If you look for on my Facebook page, on my personal Facebook page, I have the actual drawing
that you did.
And it's a stick figure drawing that looks like a kindergartner did it. And I gave it to Jesse Mitchell over at Royal Peacock.
Mm-hmm. We've known Jesse for a long time.
Oh,
he's a local musician.
Local musician. Tons of bands. Plays in Kill the President now and still plays in Red Tape. Mm-hmm. Awesome guy. Awesome tattoo artist. I gave it to him. He chuckled a bit. He's like, all right, I kind of see what you're going at with this. Give me a little bit of time. I'll draw something up. About a half hour later, he has this beautiful drawing. And I said, that's
wow,
it.
Wow, so not... A few days later,
he's like, let me just sit down and draw something out. And just this amazing, just took the little spark of an idea and just turned
that's
it into
awesome.
A forest fire. It was fantastic. And then, so then he did that. And it's basically, it's a crest for the day that has my last name, my wife's maiden name, and the date of our wedding. And it's just a crest with a bicycle with a couple of beer cans tied to it, you know, kind of the mm-hmm. just married thing. So those are my two tattoos. And I've always been in the school of thought that a tattoo should symbolize a very, you know, significant point
sure.
in your life. But, you know, that's just me.
Well,
I have friends who have tattoos or just like, I like the way it looks. So I got it. So
going with Jason Brow's, mm-hmm. You know, bad tattoos, I have bad tattoos.
Which one would you say is a bad tattoo?
The one on my wrist, but I'll get to that. So the first tattoo I have this Aztec cat mm-hmm. On my lower leg above my ankle where
okay.
many women would get a tattoo. But that was my first tattoo. But the significance is that in 1996, I had long hair.
Okay.
I had, you know, long, curly, you know, or flowing
it was
blonde
beautiful.
Hair.
You can go ahead and say your hair
was
beautiful.
It was beautiful. So, you know, my hair was getting thin in mm-hmm. the front, just kind of wispy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I hadn't cut my hair because everybody was cutting their hair. In like mm-hmm. the early 90s, everyone started, you know, 92, 93, 94, everyone started cutting their hair. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be the last guy with long hair. I'm going to be the last guy in the band in Sacramento with long mm-hmm. hair. And then it got to the point where I was wondering, I'm not cutting my hair because everyone else is cutting their hair. Isn't that just as bad as cutting your hair because everyone is cutting your hair? So, like, you have this double, like,
yeah.
you just need to do what you want to do.
Yeah, understood.
So I cut my hair.
Okay.
And it was liberating. And I don't know how to explain why cutting all your hair off is liberating, but it was. And I was the guy, I'm like, I'm not going to get any tattoos. But I like tattoos. Mm-hmm. I always liked them. And so I cut my hair, and a few months later, I went and got a tattoo. It was, you know, the thing on the Aztec cat on my leg. So
okay.
I got that. The significance of the horrible tattoo on my wrist and my red star on my forearm,
mm-hmm.
these are my rock and roll tattoos.
Yeah.
You know, when you play guitar, these are the ones you see. And this was to always remind me if I went on and followed in my dad's footsteps and became a banker
mm-hmm.
or, you know, worked in an office, to just always remember rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, rock mm-hmm. and roll was such a huge part of my,
exactly.
At that time I was, you know, late 20s, mm-hmm. you know, I carried that off into my 30s. Now I'm in my 40s, but it's terrible. It is a terrible tattoo. It's lopsided. It's just really bad. And I also,
the placement of that is awesome though, because it's, you see, especially the red star, you see it when you're playing
sure.
guitar, when you're playing your bass, you
which
see
you know
there.
Maybe that's a little generic and that's maybe a little overused, but it was for me. And that's the thing, like my tattoos were for me. And I also have a piece on my back which is you know, it's a bit cliched now. When I came up with it in 2000, mm-hmm. so 11 years ago, it wasn't as cliched, but yeah. it was it's angel's wings.
Yeah.
And I have.
Are you going to get that finished?
Someday, you know.
Someday? Okay.
The thing I've been going back and forth about with that for years is when I lose weight. So, you know, I lose weight. I want to be in phenomenal shape and then get it done. So that's
okay.
it. So that's the little
Do you have
story.
An artist in mind for when you...
I want Nate Gonzalez to finish. Nate
okay.
was in the band Forever Gold Rush in
okay.
Sacramento. He
okay.
was in Santa Cruz. I want him to finish it because he started
He's
it.
He's the one who started. Oh, okay, that's awesome.
So, yeah, but, you know, I think I'm going to get my wrist tattoo fixed someday.
Okay.
I can't get it removed because it has blue and purple in it, and mm-hmm. Blues don't erase out.
Yeah.
So I can't get it removed, so I'm going to get it fixed. And I thought I would go to Jesse because I thought he did such
now,
a great job on it.
Now, on the topic of bad tattoos, though, I don't think either one of us have any bad tattoos.
All right, well, thank
but,
you.
We were in a band with someone who had a bad tattoo.
Are you talking about Big Tom?
Well,
and are you talking about his daughter Amber's name?
No, that's not his daughter's name.
Well,
not according to his chest.
According to his chest, it was Amler.
So would that count as a bad tattoo story?
I guess that probably is, but yeah, that's covered up by an awesome tattoo now. But yeah, you know, Tom is known for playing without his shirt on. And so in practice, anytime he would take a shirt off, of course, we would always ask, who's Amler?
So there's our bad tattoo story. All right.
So we got to rip
what
through
do we
these.
Got?
So
what do we got
Matt
next?
Bennett wants to know about songwriting, where music styles comes into it, whether to change the song to fit the style or vice versa. I've just written a song. And that's it. In fact, I wrote a song and brought it to the knockoffs, and the knockoffs said, "Song, we're not going to play that song. That song is stupid. We're not going to play that in this band. Play it in your other band," which I was in the band Red Star Memorial. I guess it's not a Red Star Memorial song. So the next practice came around, and I said, "Guys, I really want to try this." So it wasn't more punk. It wasn't more rock. It just was what it was. And that song was Wham Bam, which... I got the guys to reluctantly do, and then we ended up loving playing it. And
the knockoffs didn't want to do that?
No, you guys were not about it, and especially Big Tom was not about
doing
that song.
You know a song, and it's the pick on Big Tom segment here. You know what song I wrote for the knockoffs, but I remember playing it at a practice, and Big Tom said he didn't like it?
He nixed it. What one?
He nixed Baby You Make Me Pop a Boner. Yep. I wrote that for the knockoffs, too, because I wrote... Baby, You Make Me Pop a Boner, and Baby, You Make Me Sit Funny. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, one of these has got to stick somewhere. You know, it's like they're pretty much the same song, just different chords. Actually, the same chords. I just switched them around a little. But I remember Baby, You Make Me Pop a Boner. I played it at an knockoffs practice, and Big Tom's like, nah, dude, I don't like that song. Song's stupid. I'm like, okay. Later that week, I was practicing with the Secretions. I said... And I think with Secretions, it's like, here's a song I wrote. We're doing it.
I hear you.
No questions asked. And so, okay, there you go. And that turned out, you know, not to be a cash cow, but as a,
sure.
one of our more popular songs. But, yeah, damn you, Big Tom.
Yeah, he usually has good taste. Okay, so then I said, we said, hey, we're recording a new show, so let's dig a little deeper. What questions do you have? Okay. So we're going to blow through these here in just the next couple of minutes before we take a break. So the importance of cardio and defending oneself against zombies. And here's the thing. You don't have to be in good cardio shape because zombies should be slow. Fast zombies are BS because... Zombies should be slow, and you should feel a bit sympathetic for the zombie. Okay. And when you're killing the zombie, you should feel a little bad that you're actually killing the zombie.
Now, there is sometimes on, I want to say it was on the Netflix. You All can right. see the instant, you can watch movies instantly on your laptop. And there was a documentary on zombie movies.
Okay.
And we had Aaron and I had already watched a couple movies, and we're like, okay, let's just watch something really stupid. And it was a very good documentary because it was basically the argument of slow zombies versus fast zombies. And then they talked about, well,
You're
there's several
me.
Different types of zombies. There's the ones that are because of some nuclear reaction.
Okay.
There's some that are, you know, it's a rage that was passed, like a form of rabies.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the one that was made famous by Lucio Fulci, the ones that are brought up by voodoo.
Yes.
And so there's those. But the big argument was fast versus slow. And these zombie experts, you know, they just could not see eye to eye. And George Romero... The expert of zombies said zombies should not run.
Oh, they right. Yes, it's George Romero. You're like, kidding me.
No,
see, I thought that was my own little beef.
No, no.
That I don't know what it was. It was a few years ago. I'm blanking
so
on
you
what
didn't
it is.
Like the remake of Dawn of the Dead.
No, that was terrible. Is that the one with the blonde girl in Ving Rhames? That was horrid.
Really?
You did not like that.
I really did.
That movie was horrid.
I loved it. I thought it was... And I get razzed about this. People
you
tell me
should.
You don't like horror movies because I like it more than the original.
Well, here's the deal. I don't like horror movies. I only like the only horror genre I like is zombies, which is weird, but that's what I like. You know what? We're going to take a break. We're going to come back to some of these questions and we'll be back with Valve Movements.
All right.
If I had it,
Hey, Dan, you know where I go when I need website work?
No.
I go to TedAngel.com. We're the best admin in the business.
We are.
All I wanna do is wham bam. All I wanna do is wham bam. All I wanna do is.
Back on Vowel Movements.
Back on Vowel Movements.
And we're talking to our friends via Facebook.
Via Facebook. My friend and coworker, Caroline, she asked us about the cardio in terms of defending oneself against zombies.
Now, and let's just say during the break, Dan and I went further on our discussion.
Yeah, we did.
So.
And can you capture like your main reasoning for that in about 15 seconds?
Just the sympathetic part of it, because you want to be... you should feel sympathy towards the zombie because it's not the actual person. It's and you need to kill that person. So the fast zombie there, it takes all the sympathy out of, okay. You know,
I think that's a great,
zombie,
and
so.
We can, I think that would be a great, topic to hit with, Brown Cock.
I believe
with,
you're right.
With
yeah.
Jazz and
yeah,
Craig,
they're a couple of experts.
Oh yeah.
So.
They would love that. So I'm going to take these next two. Caroline right. hit us with three. I'm going to take these next two in one. I'm going to just call them out to you.
All right.
Coke versus Coke Zero. Does anyone really care?
No one really cares, but it's Coke.
Okay. and then the other one, Hostess, fruit pies. Delicious snack or gateway drug?
Hostess uses beef fat in their product, so it doesn't...
Delicious snack, then. Correct. That's all. So you're saying a beef product is a gateway drug?
It's just terrible. I don't know. I don't eat it.
I've got
That's
a
10
Slim
meant.
Jim a day habit. And it's all because of those damn home run pies.
Now, home run pies I can eat, but it's the... The Hostess uses beef fat. Home run pies, no beef fat.
All right, so like ding-dongs and ho-hos.
Yeah,
and,
none of that. I have to eat the Little Debbie. Because Little Debbie is a Seventh-day Adventist-owned product, so and they're vegetarians. So.
And you can get like a box of 30 of those for like a buck.
I know.
Yeah, that's
believe me,
ridiculous.
I know.
Ridiculous.
I don't fill out my WWF shirt like this for a reason.
All right, you no take the next one for us. So thank you, Caroline. I really appreciate you taking the time. And in those three, you really capture Caroline's sense of humor.
Excellent.
She's
but it's really awesome.
Really sarcastic, just wonderful awesome. Sense of humor, awesome coworker. So thank you, Caroline.
All right, so our friend Rick asks, the best Mexican food place in town? Maybe pooping, LOL. Can I be your wrestling correspondent? Ha ha. So let's take these one at a time. The best Mexican food place in town. What's your favorite?
It's always been Tres Hermanas.
Okay.
And then it goes back and forth between Tres Hermanas and Caballo Blanco.
Yeah, Caballo Blanco is my favorite by far.
And then recently there's a place on Folsom in like 33rd Cafe Capriccio.
Okay, I haven't
doesn't
been there.
Sound like a Mexican restaurant, but it is amazing. It's amazing. So you got to. I want to say it's next to the bar. It's right around where that bar Cheaters is on Folsom.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know,
yeah,
the Pittsburgh
sure.
Steelers bar. It's right around there. It's a great, great Mexican restaurant. So
all right.
Definitely check those out. So that not to say that's the best Mexican food place in town, because quite honestly, I still think it goes back and forth between Tres Hermanas and Caballo Blanco.
Awesome.
I love Caballo Blanco, though.
Okay, he says, maybe pooping. No, definitely pooping. Everyone poops.
Everyone
Rick,
poops.
Sorry. And can you be a wrestling?
I have that book.
Everybody poops everyone poops?
I have Everybody Poops and Everyone Farts.
Yeah.
I have both of those books in my classroom library.
Awesome. Can I be your wrestling correspondent? What do you want to correspond? Sure.
Yeah. I would say what would be great is if Rick wanted to, if we wanted to record him giving us, an SPW update.
You know what? I was just going to say, Rick, you need to go out to SPW
Yeah.
And yeah, you do a little update on that. Sure, you can be a part of our show. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll get my little little digital recorder. I'm
a little
like, hey,
2 or 3 minute update. Absolutely. Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun. That would be a lot of fun. All right. My friend Lucas, who plays in the band Hit Reset from Stockton. Autoerotic asphyxiation.
It's asphyxiation, and my father listens to the show, so we won't be talking about that.
Okay. Ken Dose, similar. First sexual experience.
Once again, actually, I'm not going to tell you. I started young. Okay. I was a horny little kid.
Okay.
But I am going to tell you about something since I just said my father.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you about my first wet dream.
Interesting.
And my first wet dream went down like this. I was asleep in the front room.
Mm-hmm.
And my dream is I'm on an elevator and I'm with some woman and I'm getting it on with her. But outside the elevator, my father is talking.
Mm-hmm.
And when I woke up, there was a mess, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was in the next room talking. So my first wet dream included my father.
My first wet dream included Florin Mall, which is no longer there.
Okay.
I was in Florin Mall, and for some reason, everyone needed to find a hiding place. And there was a bush inside of Florin Mall. Exactly. So I jumped inside this bush, and there was a girl there. And she was hiding with me, and she wanted to, and then she proceeded to hug me.
Okay.
Which I really enjoyed the feeling of that. And then next thing I know, I'm waking up thinking I broke something.
See, now so, I knew what had happened.
Yeah, I do. Well, anywho. So so that counts as first sexual experience. So thank you, Ken Dose. Appreciate that.
All right. What's next?
All right. We have...
How was it returning to SPW?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been there in a long time.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, it's interesting.
All right. So next.
And part two of that is, with multiple bands between both of you, how long until we see Vowel Movements, the band... Or Bobby in the ring at SPW.
Oh, Bobby doesn't like wrestling, and Dan and I don't like playing in bands together.
No,
so,
no. But you can see Vowel Movements live. We've talked about doing another live show.
We are going to do another live show.
That was just so much fun.
You know, this week, I played in Reno. You were playing in Stockton.
Yeah.
This past weekend, this coming up weekend, I am going camping with my father-in-law and my two brother-in-laws and or brothers-in-law.
Mm-hmm,
and we just had to do it in the studio tonight just for time reasons. But honestly, we're going to take this on the road more often than not, I think. Yeah. Just
and if,
what we
and
do,
so. If people have a show that they're promoting or their friends are playing in a band at a show, just say, hey, you guys should come do Vowel Movements at this show. We would love that.
Absolutely.
We're not picky. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Just to
invite
come.
Us out. I know someone in a, gosh darn it. Oh, I think Keith Jukes invited us. Hey, we'll play in the show, but that's this weekend when I'm going to be out camping.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
All right. Phil also asks, or Phil Mycock asks, don't ask me if I'm an ask murderer. Children or no children? I'm having a sale.
Aww. And he does a great job. He brings his girls out to a few of the shows, and they're always wearing like Kepi shirts and whatnot. So, children or no children? That's a deep question there. Actually,
maybe. Who knows?
You're a maybe. I'm a definitely no.
See, what's funny is I think 10 years ago I was a definite no and you were a maybe.
Yeah, that's it. That is. But now
I think I don't want to speak for you. But
no,
I know
if I get a vasectomy, I get a guitar.
Oh, well,
I'm
going to
get a guitar if I get a vasectomy. That's Aaron's promise. So
see, I just like putting on a show, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay.
Sarah Renee Uranga, she just says world peace. And the United States of America is currently in 3 wars, so there is not world peace.
Yeah, there would never be any world peace.
Okay. Right, so Gordy Williams, he's a high school friend, a couple years older than me. He was probably best friends in high school with Ken from Foster's Bar.
Oh, okay.
And Gordy,
so he is Vowel Movement's family.
And not only that, he used to book us at Virgin Records. He was the guy that used to book the knockoffs at Virgin.
Wow, those were some legendary shows.
Those were some absolutely legendary shows.
I split my pants in front of a student at one of those shows.
Yes, you did. And a suit that I gave you, I think.
I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right. It was rock and roll. So he asks, dead rock stars you've seen play. That's a great question.
The Ramones.
Oh, the Ramones.
I've seen the Ramones.
Johnny Cash.
I've never seen
Johnny
Cash.
I saw Johnny Cash. I saw Buck Owens.
Oh,
saw Nirvana.
So lucky. I saw Nirvana. Who else have I seen who has passed?
Gosh darn it. I wish we should have thought it. Gordy, I'm really sorry. We should have thought about that because that needed some, that needs some thought put into it. But yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah. First one I thought of was the Ramones. Yeah, I saw Ramones, Johnny, so. Joey, I saw the Ramones without Dee Dee, and then I also saw Dee Dee Ramone.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Didn't get a chance to see Amy Winehouse.
All right.
Alrighty.
All right. First venues, large and small. So my first large venue was my very first concert, which is Autzen Stadium in Eugene, Oregon. That's where the Oregon Ducks play football. And that was Foreigner, Loverboy, Night Ranger, and Joan Jett.
And when I met her... they are all appearing this weekend at the Lodi Asparagus Festival.
But when I met Joan Jett a couple weeks ago, I actually told her, hey, you were on the bill at my very first concert in 1982. And she looked at me and went, whoa. So that was my first large. What was your first large concert?
My first large concert was the Cow Palace in San Francisco, and it was to see Red Rockers and U2.
Oh, awesome.
And this was pre Band to Save the World U2.
Sure.
Bono still had the giant
mullet.
And yeah, it was great. And then people were booing Red Rockers.
Oh, that's a bummer.
And they came out and they played China, which was their big hit, and then people started throwing shoes at them. It was
a good band.
Thought they were great. Yeah. I thought they were great. I was in the seventh grade. And then first small venue was the Guild Coffee House. And saw Gnar, Gnar, the Horny Mormons, and Lung Butter. So that was one of my first punk shows. Mickey and I had already started the Secretions, but hadn't really gone out to see, you know, I was a late bloomer to punk.
Sure.
It wasn't until I was 20 that I started going to these punk shows. And so we went to that, and that was the night I met Jay Onishkin.
I
remember him coming up to me and just saying, hey, thanks for coming to the show.
He's
and
a
I
good guy.
Like, wow, this guy in the band actually talked to me. And so that was my first small venue. What was your first small venue?
It was the Oasis, and I was taken to the show by Ken from Foster's Bar in 1985, and we saw Megadeth and Verbal Abuse. It was a Clear and Distinct Ideas show, so of course it was metal and punk rock.
Yeah,
so yeah, that was my... And the Oasis is no longer there. That was a corner of 19th and I, and... no longer there. So yeah, that was my first show with Ken.
And I'm glad Gordy asked this next one. Who had the most badass bike when you were a kid? You answer this one first.
The family down the street that basically had a hand in raising me. I spent most of my time down there. Mm-hmm. And Kim Milligan had a girl's Stingray, purple Stingray. That was my favorite bike.
Yeah.
And any chance I could, I jumped on. It was a girl's bike. I didn't care. It was a cool Stingray. So to this day, she had the coolest bike when I was a kid. How about you?
The guitarist from the Deftones.
Oh, okay. That's right. He lived right around the corner from you.
He actually lived right behind me.
Yeah. Okay.
And then Chino lived down the street. And
okay.
And then when they were starting off as a band, they used to practice. They would alternate practices back and forth between the two houses. But he used to have a brand new bike every Christmas.
Oh, really?
And so it was always a brand new BMX chrome deal. And, you know, I'm sitting there riding a girl's frame banana seat bike that I put like a 10 speed seat on. And yeah, so, I mean, I just had my little ghetto bike and we would always see him and we were just like, oh, his parents buy him everything.
That's funny.
And now he's in the Deftones.
I think he played in a band with Kevin, and Kevin used to lament about having to drive to South Sac to pick him up for practice.
Oh, really?
So yeah. All right, so thanks for your questions, Gordy.
Yeah, thank you, Gordy.
And then Matt Bennett has a challenge for us, and that's not going to happen because...
Yeah,
no
cheese puffs.
There's no cheesy puffs in this house, Matt.
No.
Sorry. So we'll have to get to that next time. Okay, so here's what we're going to do, Dan. We've went through listener questions.
Yes, we did.
Thank you, everyone, very much.
That was fun. We should definitely...
do that more often.
We spent a lot of time, but maybe our first segment could... Depending on the listener response, our first segment can always be
hitting
those topics.
Questions. Sure. All right, so we're going to take a break. It's a little early, but we have something really grand planned.
We're going to talk for a long time.
That's right. Okay, we'll be back in a minute.
You're too young for me, but as everyone can see, everything about you changes my anatomy. The way you smile.
Did you know Vowel Movements is friends with a very great artist?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a great
Not
artist.
You jackass.
Who then?
S. Britt.
As in Stefan Britt?
Stefan Britt at sbritt.com.
What can I find there?
Well, you can find all of his art, but you can also buy stuff there.
You can buy stuff at sbritt.com? Mm-hmm.
You can buy various prints and an Eddie Broth doll.
Tell him Vowel Movements set
you. I seen you eat that dead bird. All right, coming out of that break with Boner by The Secretions.
Horrible song for The Knockoffs.
Horrible song for The Knockoffs, but a hit for The Secretions. It's funny that the two songs that we're most known for,
exactly,
which is
exactly.
Wham Bam by that I wrote that you heard at the top of the last segment, which was the Mission Satellite version of Wham Bam,
okay,
and The Secretions doing Boner, that Big Tom put the nicks on both of those, although I prevailed because I insisted that The Knockoffs
and that
it,
was but. Always a that was always like a hit at the when we played yeah, it in I the mean, Knockoffs are, that was always the one that people wanted to hear,
you know, for better or worse. That's the song I'm most known for. That's the song you're most known for. I want to ask you before we get into our last segment, we'll try to keep it as brief as we can,
okay,
but I want to ask you about a song, and I know I've given you a hard time about it over the years, called Art Rock MF'er.
Okay.
And the reason I've given you a hard time is because I know your CD collection. And recently, and why I bring it up today is because the other day you mentioned that you were on a Jesus and Mary Chain kick.
Yes.
If ever there was an art rock band, the Jesus and Mary Chain would be it. So what I really want to know, and it's what I've never talked to you about, and what I used to give you a hard time about is, you have Bauhaus CDs, or
I do.
A Bauhaus CD, at least.
I do have several. I have Bauhaus. I have Sisters of Mercy.
See, and that's the thing.
Peter
I know
Murphy.
That you and I really kind of, The Cure, you and and I don't know
Cure
if you would,
this,
you would say The Cure is an art rock band, but I know that you and I like kind of the dark goth stuff, which I would consider art rock.
Okay.
Now, I know in the song, you kind of call out Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
Are you not a Velvet Underground fan? Like, Waiting for the Man, Heroin, Sweet Jane.
I feel
it just what is it just what they've become to represent?
I think it's more what they come to, because I actually do like some Velvet Underground songs, but it's the people who wave the Velvet Underground flag high and mighty, and so it's what they've come to represent.
And so in the song,
I'm so happy that you listened to the song.
Well, of
I'm
course
flattered
I have.
That you've actually listened to the song that intently.
Well, I just, you know, there is a duality within that song that I've always found entertaining. And when one of the lines is, never wash your underwear, you know, punk rockers aren't exactly known for their,
for their
cleanliness
for their
hygiene.
For the hygiene,
sure.
Exactly.
So I just always found a great duality with that that always made me... you know, maybe I'd rib you a little bit about it, but I just, I really found amusing that really you could just turn that around to punk rock MF'er and, you know, change the band.
Totally.
And
you could. I think when I wrote that song, there was, we had, Morgan was the guitarist in the band, and he was really adamant about bringing keyboards into the band.
Okay.
And
now, you know, I love keyboards.
I know you do, but
there's a time and a place for them all.
There's a time and a place. And I think in one fell swoop, like within 1 week, he brought a keyboard to practice and he brought like a slew of guitar effects pedals.
Ooh.
And
ouch.
He wanted to kind of like change the direction. And I was really mad because I'm like, no, damn it. I'm in a band that I want to sound like the Ramones and Motorhead, and that's it. And nothing else. No, we're not gonna do this. And so I think that was the initial inspiration, is me being angry that someone wanted to change something that they just came into.
Yep.
And then we recorded it with a different guitarist and moved on from there. But you know, I kind of like see it as like, well, you know, at the time, I don't think it was written towards you know, what I thought were the art rock community. It was more, why do you want to change something when keeping it simple and keeping it what we love is what it's all about. And then as time goes on, it's like, I realize that, you know, the whole indie rock and the hipster scene that sometimes, infests the Midtown Sacramento area. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, sometimes that song's a little more relevant than,
sure,
than it was when I wrote it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, but yeah, there is that duality.
But it was just the your Jesus and Mary Chain comment on Facebook the other day that just made me smile.
I love Jesus and Mary Chain.
It's a great band. I do as well.
I love them. And,
well, it's so funny.
So I do listen to bands that a lot of people would think are art rock.
You know, I have a big... I was talking to Greg that was formerly in Magnolia Thunderfinger one night, and we were talking about... I said, I just don't really like pretentious rock. Mm-hmm. And then I paused and I said... Except Echo and the Bunnymen is one of my favorite bands. And he started laughing. He was like, I was just about to call you on Echo and the Bunnymen, because if ever there was a pretentious rock band, Echo and the Bunnymen is it. So, yeah, you know, there's always the duality of the things you hate, but then you kind of really like some of the
stuff. I think everyone has the right to hate a certain band, but like a band that sounds a lot like that.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right.
Well, just like, you know, you like Echo and the Bunnymen.
I do.
Do you like The Cure?
I do.
But you don't like The Smiths?
I don't.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, so say I hate them. I still try to come around on The Smiths.
You have. You've talked to me. You've really made a conscious effort to try.
I do. I try. Like, once a year, I try. And
I'm still flattered that you listen to the song that intently.
You know, it's not even that intently. It's pretty in your face. And even live, I've caught in the lyrics. But for years, I think the first time I ever, heard the song, I said, hey, yeah, Art Rock MF-er, I like that song. Yeah, you own Bauhaus CDs, and then we laughed about it, but, so...
That is true. That was true.
All right, so, here...
Let's get to the meat and potatoes.
Meat and potatoes of this episode, what everyone's been waiting for. Yeah. Wrestling entrance themes.
Oh, boy.
And why are they important? Because, now, wrestlers didn't always have themes, and in fact, we were talking during break, Gorgeous George actually came out to Pomp and Circumstance, mm-hmm. which... later on, one of our favorite wrestlers mm-hmm. did. That was in the 50s. No one else really came out to anything. Huh? I know that when Roddy Piper first came out, he came out mm-hmm. to live bagpipes.
Yeah.
But
he was not accomplished, but he knew how to play the bagpipes.
Yes, he did.
And so he would come out playing the bagpipes every now and then. But like Andre the Giant,
absolutely.
Music.
Jimmy Snuka didn't have music.
Yeah. No, not until the later years.
Sure, when they made themes for everyone, when it wasn't... So what is the importance? Let's talk about the importance of first. Let's talk to the people that don't know wrestling and don't really care and why it is a big deal.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, because it builds anticipation. Wrestling is a show, and people who can't see that, they're closing their eyes to something that can be looked at as something very artistic and something, kind of dramatic and beautiful even. And it's building the anticipation happening.
And to get on my high horse a little bit, it's one of the last great American folk arts. Mm-hmm. I think it's pumpkin carving and professional wrestling.
Exactly.
I honestly believe those are the last two American folk arts
and
that we have.
And to you 5950 hat wearing, affliction t-shirt wearing jerks out there, MMA and boxing have both stolen so much from professional wrestling. Boxing never had entrance music until the WWF started having their wrestlers come out to themes. Then you started hearing boxers come out to entrance music.
Well, you can go further back. Muhammad Ali absolutely always says he was influenced by Freddie Blassie.
There you go.
He full on just
and
lays
anyone,
it down.
And anyone who wants to say that MMA doesn't steal anything from the WWE, I would love to just sit down and just give you a shopping list of everything they've stolen from them. And you look at Dana White will be the first one to say, he talks to Vince McMahon to try and get ideas of what he can do to improve his product.
I was going to say they should, because they need to realize that their talent is their characters.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just some schlub. I mean, who wants to see some schlub? You want to see characters. Or if you do see some schlub, it's his gimmick.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have the gimmick.
You're
have
not going to pay $35 to go see a live event and not care about who's in that ring, whether it's a choreographed, the outcome is predetermined, or whether it's two guys in an octagon beating the living hell out of each other. You need to care about those two people in there.
Because it's about the show. And in fact, one of my big complaints about modern day roller derby is, you know, it's not a work for starters.
Yeah.
And so it's boring as hell. To me, watching modern day roller derby is akin to watching amateur wrestling. Yeah. Okay, sure, there's your art.
What are the days of the San Francisco Bay Bombers?
No kidding.
Wow. I used to love watching. So getting back to your question, what's the importance of that entrance theme to build the anticipation?
Okay, but an entrance theme needs, it has to have, when it first hits, you know that this star is coming out.
The first 3 seconds of the song are so important. You need to be able to know who it is. And there's that buildup. And we talked about this off air a little bit. I talk about the curtain moment. Like the song has to have a buildup, but the wrestler or the boxer or the MMA artist or whatever you want to call them, whenever they come out, it's not at the first opening segment of the song. There needs to be that buildup and then what I call the curtain moment. John Cena has it in his song. I would say Hulk Hogan had it with Real American.
In fact, okay, so Real American. Let's take our listeners to Real American really quick and talk. And what I want you to think about is, you, dear listener, is you hear the first strings of the song and think about him busting through the curtain.
Yeah. And for the people who aren't wrestling nerds like us, and you can explain a little further, it wasn't originally meant for Hulk Hogan.
So, yeah, this was originally for Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you get the wrestling album, the original wrestling album, Real American by Rick Derringer is on it, but it's credited as the theme song for Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo. And there's another song that's Hulk Hogan's theme song, which he never came out to.
Yes, that's right.
But the opening guitar riff, that opening guitar riff. And we can tell a personal story. We were at WrestleMania 22?
21.
21. We were at WrestleMania 21, and we had a feeling he was going to come out.
Just maybe.
During a certain segment, we had a feeling he was going to come out. And I think we weren't alone within the 17,000
people. Well, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame the night before, so there was anticipation that maybe he's in the building.
And as soon as there's just a little bit of silence as, you know, the bad guy is laying down the beat down on a sympathetic character, that opening guitar riff, and I've never been to concerts where the crowd was that loud.
I went eight bananas myself. Yeah. I just
we turned into those little kids watching wrestling in front of the TV on a Saturday morning.
And the thing was, you know, growing up, I know I've talked about this before, but I was a Roddy Piper fan. I was kind of anti Hulk Hogan, but it didn't matter. You know, I was full on into,
I was about ready to get a Hulkamania tattoo that night after that. But it, once again, it's that opening guitar rip.
It is.
It just like, I mean, you want to see something special. You see a packed arena for wrestling and that opening guitar rip. The place goes nuts.
Absolutely. You know, and so speaking of Roddy Piper, the thing I love about Roddy Piper's theme is it's just the little snare drum roll at the beginning and you know what's going to happen. And then the bagpipes come in, and you just know. And then he just saunters on out, you know.
But once again, it's that drum roll at the beginning. It's that drum roll at the beginning. You can always think of the times when Hulk Hogan was a heel, when he was Hollywood Hogan, and he's just on the mic, and then you hear that drum roll and the bagpipes, and then you know that his arch nemesis
is coming on out.
If Hogan is in full-blown heel mode, you know Piper's not coming out to shake his hand and say, good job, friend.
That's
right.
You
know, Piper's out to right the wrongs.
Yep.
And everyone knows that right off the bat.
And I think that's one of the things with themes is I like where there's that instant hit, but it's like anticipation. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the Hulk Hogan theme hits and it's just on. Mm-hmm. Like, as soon it's like, dun, 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 and he's out. And,
exactly.
And you're ready to go. Yeah. Piper, you know, there's a little bit of the drum roll, the anticipation. One of the classic themes, I think, is Pomp and Circumstance. Now, Gorgeous George came out to
You were saying that earlier.
Came out to that. But Randy Savage came out to that. And now, I just think it was so perfect.
And Savage, even for as long as he lived. Savage never denied the fact that he took this, or that he borrowed this from Gorgeous George.
That's right. And he always kind of felt a little iffy about it, I suppose. I don't know. But I had no problem with him using Pomp and Circumstance. That was fine. God rest his soul.
Yeah.
Randy Savage coming out to Pomp and Circumstance. Of course, we have one of his later versions with the big old guitars. But yeah. In WWF, he...
It was just the classic version.
Yeah. One of my favorites, just because of his whole angle, was the Ted DiBiase theme.
Ah.
And again...
Opening...
the opening
right
laugh.
There, the laugh. You know who it is.
So, you know, you hear the laugh and then he busts out of the curtain. And
funny story, at the show that I played in Stockton yesterday, Mitta gave me a Ted DiBiase action figure that comes on a little stand, the button that you push, and has the opening laugh.
That's awesome. I would say, you know, the next one I have up here is The Ultimate Warrior. Mm-hmm. And his is much like Hogan's in that It's the opening guitar riff, and you know he's just going to come running out.
The WrestleMania where Hogan is facing Psycho Sid, and then Papa Shango comes in.
All right.
And they're double-teaming Hulk Hogan, and just all seems lost for Hulk Hogan. The match has been thrown out the window. Hogan's getting the beatdown of a lifetime. That guitar riff hits. The place
goes crazy. See, and that's the thing. If he just runs out, you know, it's going to take a while for people to notice. People will start going crazy. But you hit that guitar riff and the place goes
instant nuts. Instant reaction. And that's something that wrestling has mastered.
Absolutely. You know, Bret Hart's theme is very similar in that it has the opening little guitar feedback-y thing. And then the whole thing hits.
Now, this one wasn't looked upon favorably in the ESPN article, wasn't it?
I don't think it was, and I love this one, but it's probably because I'm such a Hitman fan. Because
the other thing about a great wrestling theme, because we're listening to a lot of champions here. We're listening to
a lot of champions.
So whenever you went to a house show or even a televised show, these were the wrestlers who were also the last wrestler you saw that night.
Oh, that's absolutely right.
So these are songs that also... send the fans home happy. I remember going to shows, and the last song I heard at the end of the night was Real American. I remember going to house shows, and the last song I heard was the Ultimate Warrior theme. I remember going to shows, and the last song I heard was the Bret Hart theme. So it's like they're also those songs that, like, they also have to have that longevity of the song, like, okay, this is going to send the fans home happy.
Well, yeah, and it has to, one of the things is that it has to last for them to come down the ramp, to maybe walk around, if they're, you know, the good guy, walk around the ring, get in the ring. So it has to hold your attention. It can't just peter out. And then, like you were saying, at the end, it has to hold the audience at the end while our champion is in the ring and, you know, the
song
is playing.
Like, you couldn't imagine the Ted DiBiase song playing for much longer than him coming from the back to the ring.
That's
because
right.
Because he was never... the good guy. I think the only one that was able to do it both ways like that was Savage.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you're right.
Whether he was the heel or whether he was the face, he came out to Pomp and Circumstance. What do we have coming up next?
So this one is, I think for the sheer ridiculousness of it, this is maybe one of the greatest themes of all time, written by the great Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. And this is Sexy Boy.
He wrote that song?
He wrote that, and this is Shawn Michaels' intro, and sang by Shawn Michaels, too. It is one of the most ridiculous songs, and I'm just glad that basically, and it could be that, like, during the Attitude Era, he wasn't around, but they kept it for his whole career. Like, you know, he probably, had he stayed, he would have switched to something not as ridiculous, but the fact that he kind of left for 5 years and then came back and came out to this song, and then for the next 10 years, this was just his song. Just the stupidest.
Yeah.
Ugh, terrible song, but so great.
But once again, he has that Savage effect to it, where he came out to this as a heel.
Yep.
And also as a face.
Yeah, transcended.
Now when you hear that, those opening moments of the song, fans go crazy.
So speaking of opening moments, what we have right here is, I think, one of the greatest openings, because you know as soon as you hear it, what's going to happen. So The Undertaker, just this, you know, the ominous bell with, you know, the weird kind of church choir, the crackling of thunder.
And the curtain moment coming up in that, just a moment.
Exactly what Dan's talking about. And there it is. Yeah, and then he comes out. Now, all of these songs, save Pomp and Circumstance, mm-hmm. I suppose, were WWF originals.
Yes.
But before that, people would actually come out to songs. In fact, Hogan would come out to Eye of the Tiger after Rocky III.
Yeah.
And wrestlers started coming out to real themes.
Yeah.
However, once, you know, the artist got wind of it, or their publishing affiliates,
mm-hmm.
they put a stop to that.
Exactly.
Either you pay us or you quit using it. So all of a sudden they had in-house writers.
Exactly. So there were, and in the 80s, prior to the Attitude Era, WWF, they had one guy who wrote all of the songs. It was basically a keyboard and an electric guitar, and he wrote all of them.
Well, you know, and since the Attitude Era, that guy is Jim Johnston, and mm-hmm. he's the guy that still writes everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's rare that it's, you know, an outsider comes in and writes.
Yeah. But now the WWE, they do have like CM Punk's theme song.
Mm-hmm.
They have bands.
Sure.
That actually play the song. I think one of the first bands that did a song was Motorhead, which was frowned upon in that ESPN article.
Yeah,
I know.
Which is,
we have Motorhead later on in the show. We do.
But, so what I was talking about is, you know, when bands played other people's songs, but that still continued down in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Now these were songs. They weren't written for the wrestler. They weren't written for the wrestler. And I'm not sure which one we have.
The Mil Máscaras.
So we have Mil Máscaras. If you listen to the words of the song, it's all about having your heart broken. It has nothing to do with Mil Máscaras other than the words sky high. And he would jump. They would say sky high. So written by the band Jigsaw. It's a...
Now, did you know about the band Jigsaw before?
No,
okay.
No. The only reason either. I knew that the band's name Jigsaw is because I looked up the song, because Mil Máscaras would come out to this in Japan. And, yeah.
Boy, it's odd.
It is an odd song to come out to, but... so a lot of these wrestlers would come out to these things. This one doesn't necessarily have the curtain moment.
Nope.
For me, I hear the song and I just think of all the Mil Máscaras tapes that I have that I've watched, and I've heard this song over and over as he comes out, and the Japanese crowd goes crazy when they hear that opening guitar
so
riff.
Funny.
But like, this is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and possibly my least favorite entrance song.
But it gets better. For instance, El Hijo de Santo,
mm-hmm. the son of Santo, he comes out to in whether he's working in Mexico or even working in the United States, comes out to a song which kind of got a resurgence of popularity thanks to the show Arrested Development.
Wait, really?
It did. And so I'm just going to leave it at that. But this was El Hijo de Santo's entrance song.
And the thing is, he is a big enough star where he can pull off this intro. Because this is a long intro that you wouldn't get away with, you know, doing anywhere else. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. WWF isn't going to let you stand behind the curtain for a minute while your music plays. But, you know, El Hijo de Santo... he can get away with it.
Yeah,
so,
he was able to get away. And this is, like I need to say now, you've already heard it, this is Europe's The Final Countdown.
And again, so you have this big, long intro, but you do have...
You have the curtain moment.
The curtain moment. And then there are the, you know, picking a song that is specific to your gimmick.
Yes. Now,
and Dr. Wagner.
Dr. Wagner, who is one of my all-time... favorite wrestlers, not just Lucha Libre, but just hands down. The great thing about Dr. Wagner is he was able to work every style. He was able to work the very stiff Japanese style where they really hit and they really kick the crap out of each other. He was able to work the Lucha Libre style, which is a lot of moves, a lot of fast moves, just no time to breathe. And also able to work a comedy style match, and he's also able to work the American style match, which is a much slower, slower style, easier to digest. So Dr. Wagner figured, well, what better song for a doctor to come out to than "Bad Medicine" by Bon Jovi?
Wow.
Bon Jovi. Yeah, Bon Jovi's
better. Yeah, so, you know, they're playing his gimmick. I think that is that's really awesome.
And not too long ago, I'd say maybe about a year ago, there's two main wrestling promotions in Mexico, CMLL and AAA.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Wagner has been CMLL the entire time.
No kidding. He's never wrestled for AAA.
Never wrestled for AAA. And then at one of the end of AAA's big pay-per-views, one of the wrestlers is getting beat down. This song starts playing. And everyone's like, no way, it couldn't be. And then Dr. Wagner's standing on the stage and just doesn't do anything, but he's just standing there just to make people think, what's going to happen? The show ends right
no
there.
No kidding.
Pay-per-view ends right
That's
there.
Awesome.
So you have to tune in to find out why
he's there
in AAA.
There is the use of theme music.
Yeah. So, I mean, and if you go to Mexico City and you play Bad Medicine by Bon Jovi, they're not going to think Bon Jovi. They're going to think
Dr. Wagner. That's awesome.
You play Europe's The Final Countdown, they're going to think Hijo de Santo. You go to Japan and play Sky High by Jigsaw, they're not going to think One Hit Wonders from the 70s. They're going to think Mil Máscaras. They're going to be
funny.
That's a great song. It's Mil Máscaras' entrance song. But
yes. You know, themes ended up using, you know, Shawn Michaels kind of did, but
yeah.
The Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal, their voice, Hawk's voice. Starts off the theme, and that is a trend that kind of continued.
What a rush.
And prior to this, when they wrestled for NWA and even in AWA, they came out to Iron Man.
Yeah, by
which
I wanted to say Black Flag, but that wasn't Black Flag.
I love Black Flag's version of Iron Man, though. But the opening beat. The drum beat.
All right. So that kind of ends that era of wrestling.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden we get into a new era.
Okay.
And a guy by the name of Steve Austin.
Ah.
Who I know you love.
I adore that man. I really do. I don't care who knows it.
And this is, I think, what we were talking about. This is the great use of the first thing you hear.
Mm-hmm.
A little pause and then boom. Just badass.
Yeah.
Broken glass, the guitar riff, and he's storming out to the ring.
Because what's your initial reaction when you hear glass breaking?
The chaos.
Yeah.
Like something bad's happening.
Something bad is going to happen. What better sound to symbolize what Steve Austin represented at that time? It's like, you know, business was going to pick up. There was going to be trouble. He wasn't going to come out there to kiss the babies and hug the fans and high five his friends.
That's
he
right.
was out there to cause trouble. And oh, that was just, I just remember this, the being at live shows and this, the chills of hearing that sound.
That
was amazing.
So this is what is known as the Attitude Era.
Yes.
And Stone Cold Steve Austin ushered in the Attitude Era.
He was.
And along with that came a guy named Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
And his first gimmick was Mankind. Now, Mankind had a couple of different themes before the theme that he is known for.
Yeah.
Which, just like Steve Austin,
Had that opening sound. So and what
perfect.
Do you think of when you hear tires screeching?
Chaos. There's trouble.
There's trouble. There's going to be some destruction. Someone's going to get hurt. Which was perfect for Mankind. This was a much friendlier Mankind than the original Mankind. He had kind of something more along the lines of an Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Which was perfect for his. It was supposed to be this crazy, misunderstood.
Uh-huh.
Now, this was like the lovable, goofy. You know, you gotta love Mick Foley.
That's right.
You know, he's gonna do something crazy, but, you know, everyone loves him. Everyone just wants to cuddle Mick Foley. All right, so, like, you know, with the Attitude Era, with the WWF at the time, I think they had their finger on the button right there. They knew that initial sound was so important. And, you know, we had Stone Cold Steve Austin with the glass breaking. Mm-hmm. We had
McFoley
with the tires screeching. So like, and when I ask you, what does that make you think of? And it's like chaos, destruction, something crazy is happening. And then you had Dwayne Johnson, whose character was The Rock. What do you think of when you think of The Rock?
His attitude,
his voice.
Arrogance, his voice. Yeah, his voice. Sure.
We'll probably go down as the greatest talker in wrestling.
I would say so.
And I'm not saying, oh, don't you mean speaker? No, the greatest talker
in wrestling.
No one can take the mic and command an audience and just, no one could keep up with him.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
No one could ever
still
keep
can't
up
when
no,
he comes back.
When he comes back, you know, it's like you can put one of the best talkers in the business in there with him, and The Rock has to dumb his style down to not make
well,
them look,
you know, they
foolish.
Just have to really keep up. And I would say, you know, his only rival is maybe Steve Austin,
mm-hmm.
and then to a degree, you know, John Cena. They have him in there with John Cena. John Cena can get a little goofy and seem insincere, where The Rock can get goofy and still turn on a dime and be sincere with
exactly.
it.
You
know, and so you have those. The main nemesis of Steve Austin during this whole time.
Yeah.
It was Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
Just a great theme, and I just see him strutting down to the ring and
doing the McMahon strut.
But, you know, this is all WWF that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But on the other channel was WCW.
We would always talk wrestling, and I always felt like you gave WCW more of a chance.
I did.
I didn't give them as much of a chance as you did. You gave them more of a chance than I ever did.
I'll tell you why I did. So about 1990, I kind of lost touch with wrestling.
Okay.
You know, I'm 19, 20 years old, just kind of lost touch with wrestling. And in 1996, my girlfriend at the time and I, we had broken up. And for the first time in my life, I lived alone. I lived in a little duplex over off of Stockton Boulevard near the Med Center. And one night I'm changing channels.
Okay.
And I see Hulk Hogan. And he's a bad guy. I'm like, awesome. They finally turned him into a bad guy.
Yeah.
And I watched it one Monday night.
Now, even though I said I never gave WCW a chance, I was a big mark for the NWO.
Well, see, and so that's the thing.
But after that,
see, I didn't know anything about what was going on in wrestling, and I started, every Monday night, I started watching WCW. Mm-hmm. So I got invested in all the characters that were on WCW at the time. Yeah. And I remember later I was talking to my sister. She said, Bobby, your nephew Mikey really loves wrestling, and I gotta say, I like Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what? So I started flipping back and forth on Monday nights, and
it was an exciting time for wrestling.
It was an exciting time, but you know, until I joined the Knockoffs and found like-minded wrestling fans, it was just something I did on my own. And so I think I always kind of, through 2000, I always kind of carried a little soft spot for WCW because it reintroduced me to wrestling and reintroduced me to my love of wrestling, which I had kind of lost and forgot for those, you know, 5-6 years. But I haven't let it go since. I'll tell you that.
Good. Now, I think once they did the whole Wolfpack thing.
Yeah, it got that's ridiculous.
That's when I stopped. All right, a little trivia. Maybe we can, as soon as we make Vowel Movement t-shirts,
okay,
we'll give a free Vowel Movement t-shirt to anyone who could name the wrestlers that are attributed to the Knockoffs band members on the inside of Sell the Movie.
Oh, yeah, very good.
Yeah, so there you go. Name the wrestler and the band member that goes along with it.
All right, Dan. So now we move in to the modern era.
Okay.
And which might be the greatest theme of all time.
Time to play the game.
Because it's Motorhead.
Time to play the game.
It's Motorhead. And we got to see this live at WrestleMania 21.
We sure did.
And Motorhead playing this live. I remember the first time I heard it on Raw. And I'm thinking, that's either Lemmy or they've got the greatest Lemmy impersonator.
I was so stoked. I mean, of course it was Motorhead. Yeah. And I have to say, like, my respect for Triple H just skyrocketed. I'm like, he's a Motorhead fan. Oh, yeah. How cool is that?
And that was the whole thing. Like, if you look up the interview or you hear the story, they were trying to come up with new theme songs for him.
Mm-hmm.
And And Triple H is talking about it on his way to the gym. You know, he always listens to Motorhead, and you know that kind of like inspires him, gets him pumped up. And so he kept telling them, "No, can you?" And they would play these songs for him. How about this song? He's like, "No, can you make it sound a little more like Motorhead?" You know, and they're like, "Well, what do you mean?" He's like, "Just make it sound like Motorhead." And he gave them a Motorhead CD. And he was like, "Listen to this. I want it to sound like this." And they basically said, "Well, why don't we just contact Motorhead and see if they'll write a song for you, or if they'll do a song?"
Awesome.
It's like, we have this. I don't think Motorhead wrote this.
Yeah, I think
it's
they
like,
have
well,
the
we
song.
Have this song. We can ask Motorhead if they play it. The worst thing they're going to say is no.
Sure.
And Lemmy, I guess, was like, "We'd love to. Why not?" Because Motorhead had also done a version of Enter Sandman for ECW.
Ah.
So, because the Sandman used to come into
sure.
Enter Sandman by Metallica, uh-huh. but then when they re-released it, when they released a CD of the ECW entrance themes, they had Motorhead playing,
okay, gotcha.
Which I'm sure Metallica was just ecstatic about.
Oh, of
Motorhead
course.
Motorhead covering one of their songs. And so, I don't know if Lemmy's a wrestling fan or not, but he's done theme songs specifically for wrestling. It's not like they took Ace of Spades,
sure,
or Born to Raise Hell, or Orgasmatron, and they made the. Although Orgasmatron is a great wrestling theme song, if anyone wanted to use that, but it's not like they took a Motorhead song. They had Motorhead play a song for specifically for a wrestling soundtrack or for a wrestler. So Lemmy's gotta like wrestling.
Okay, so now we're gonna move into modern songs.
Okay,
and we're gonna wrap it up here. I promise. I know this is gonna be our longest running show.
That's all right. It's worth it. It's worth. And now I kind of have an idea who you're gonna bring up. Who you are a big fan of this next performer.
I am, and what's weird is he was just kind of the consummate mid-carder his mm-hmm. whole career, and then they decided to give him a push. And the thing is, they gave him the perfect theme for his push.
Exactly.
Because he was just a redneck from Texas, mm-hmm. but he lived in New York.
Yeah.
He made his mark because he was, you know, having wrestlers invest, and he got mm-hmm. known for money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they gave him the most perfect entrance theme, which is very Dallas, the TV show Dallas. This is just honestly one of my favorite themes ever. It's so perfect.
The cows are my favorite part of this song. Cows are my favorite part of this song.
So this is JBL. It's John Layfield. So John Bradshaw Layfield. And honestly, this is in my top five favorite themes ever.
I am so happy you have this song on. There they are. That's the curtain moment right there.
So great. It is so awesome.
And we also, for people who don't follow wrestling as religiously as we do, 95% of the time, John Bradshaw Layfield drove to the ring.
He did.
Or was driven.
Yes.
He never drove. He was driven to the ring in a limousine. And
with
his limousine was...
With bullhorns on the front.
Exactly.
A la Boss Hogg.
I saw a great... a great video that he posted today where he's just basically talking about, you know, reading fan mm-hmm. letters and whatnot. And he's like, and he says, he's always asked by fans, what do you think of, he calls him Albert Del Rio.
Yes.
It's like, what do you think of Albert Del Rio stealing your entrance coming in? He's like, you know what? I stole the entire gimmick from J.R. Ewing.
Sure.
And he says, I stole it from all these guys. And so he's stealing it from me. I think it's great.
That's
I think
awesome.
He's doing a fantastic job. He's like, I had a chance to meet Albert Del Rio, and he's just a wonderful guy. And,
no, that's
and I'm
awesome.
So happy for him. He's like, I'm happy for that kid. So it was great. It,
I have to say that
really awesome.
That John Bradshaw Layfield's Twitter uh-huh. is one of my favorite, you know, Radio Movement, which uh-huh. is the Vowel Movement's Twitter. We follow.
We follow
and,
John Bradshaw Layfield.
We do. And that's one of my favorite reads, to
yeah.
be honest with you. And so this is an era of, you know, themes where they got away from metal,
uh-huh.
you know, I'm the tough guy metal
yeah.
intro. And, you know, the JBL entrance was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the Kurt Angle, which I think is so perfect.
And of course, then the fans took over with chanting, you suck.
You suck.
And You know, now Kurt Angle, of course, is wrestling for Total Nonstop, or I'm sorry, Impact Wrestling, where wrestling matters.
And he comes out to a knockoff of the Red Rider Lunatic Fringe song.
Yeah, and so, but it's doesn't capture this at all. And
nope, this is one of the greatest themes of all time.
And this was, so it's owned by WWE, and he'll,
All right, so the last theme I want to get to, and boy, this is running long, and anyone that hates wrestling is going to hate the last segment of our show today, but... this is everything you talked about with the curtain call, the intro music.
Yeah. And also something that at the end of the show, you can listen to. I remember going to house shows and listening to this song, listening to Kurt Angle's theme song playing the entire time.
Sure.
As they, you know, sending everyone home happy. And more recently, I've gone home listening to this next song as the last song of the night.
And this is an original composition by the wrestler himself.
Yeah.
And this is The Time Is Now by John Cena.
My favorite part of the song because it makes me think of you. And it's coming up right about the curtain time.
Abadoo!
Right there. And even when I'm at home, when if it's a Monday night and I'm at home and John Cena comes out, during that song, I'll tell Aaron, what's Bobby saying right about now? And she'll go, Abadoo.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we think of you during the Abadoo part.
Well, thank
you. But once again, there's the curtain moment. And it's a long enough song where he can come out and he can work the crowd and, you know, milk it for all it's worth.
And it's another song. It can last at the end of the night after he's won.
Exactly.
Yeah, go around.
Exactly.
All right, Dan, we have a very long, this is our longest show. But I tried to fit all this in, but there's so many wrestling things.
There's so many
we left out that we would want to talk about.
You know what's going to happen? Tomorrow we're going to be text messaging each other. Saying, we forgot this.
I know.
We forgot this.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, you didn't know?
Exactly.
You better call somebody.
Well, yeah, you got the DX theme.
That's right.
We got the... I mean, there's so many we could get.
That's right.
So, everyone on Facebook, tell your friends to like us on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter. We are Radio Movements
on Twitter. Send us more suggestions of what to talk about. I think that's a great idea to start up first segment. We spend 15 minutes just hitting all those topics.
Yep, I think that'd be great. This was a very fun episode. Thanks, Dan, for coming over.
Thank you very much. We're going to go downstairs and give a little five-knuckle shuffle to the wives. You know,
wait
I don't
a minute.
Know what that means.
That doesn't sound right. Okay. Thanks again to everybody on Facebook. Again, follow us on Twitter, Radio Movements on Twitter.
Check out our website.
VowelMovements.net.
Yeah.
Well, you can buy us stuff.
Yeah.
You can go find our Vowel Movements the Amazon wish list.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah, do that.
We need new mics.
We do.
Can't you hear how terrible this sounds?
I think... My before the end of the year, I want to have Vowel Movements t-shirts.
Yeah, we need to make that happen.
We'll sell those on the website.
But I got to say, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts now.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Lagana has I Want Wrestling. Sounds terrible. Our little studio that we've kind of makeshifted in here sounds better than half of the podcasts that I listen to.
How hard would it be to get Colt Cabana to call in?
All right, you heard it here first, fans. Colt Cabana on Vowel Movements. I'm going to make it happen.
I would love to have Colt Cabana call in.
All right, I think I'll send him a message and say, hey, at an hour 20 into the show, we mention you. You can't skip ahead, though. Listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, except we didn't have his intro or CM Punk's intro, which, you know, I love CM Punk's music. So, okay, that's it, fans.
All right, you can't see us. Our time is now.